Hey everybody, this is Steve Jewell from the band Otis and from the Rock Revival Show and Podcast. Want to know a secret to one of the platforms I use? Well, it's an app called Anchor that provides you with all the creative tools you need to start your very own podcast for free. That's right, find something to talk about, go check them out and start yours today.
Welcome to the Rock Revival with Steve Jewell from the band Otis. Crank it up.
Welcome, everybody, to another feature, another episode of the Rock Revival Podcast. Today's a very special day. I got my right-hand man with me over here, Brother Boone Froggatt, singer for our band Otis, and all of us are big blues heads. We love soul music, Motown, just all the good stuff, all the roots, all the forms. We love it all the stuff that came before us. So this is a special day for us. We got the right reverend. We got the true groove king on here. If you hear groove and it's laid down right, it's the truth. You know it's Tony T.C. Coleman's in the house, baby. And let me tell you a little bit about T.C. before we bring him on. Mr. Coleman has had an amazing career touring the whole wide world, 10X, and back again with the right reverend. That's right, B.B. King to Otis Clay to Bobby Blue Bland, Johnny Taylor, Albert King, Albert Collins, Etta James, James Cotton, Katie Webster, ZZ Hill, O.V. Wright, and Buddy Guy, and probably so much and many more in between all that awesomeness of elite players. Tony Coleman, my man, welcome to the Rock Revival Podcast, brother. How you feeling today?
Hey, man, I'm on top of it. Good. I'm not great.
There you go, brother. Another day, 6 feet above the ground. It can't all be too bad, right?
No, sir. That's a good day.
There you go, man. And tell us all where you're calling in from this morning.
I'm calling from home.
Portland, Oregon. There you go. So that's where you're from, right? Where you're originally from?
No, I'm from Florida. I was born in Kissimmee, Florida.
Okay, awesome. Good deal. So you reside in Portland, Oregon now. I'd love just to get right into it. Tell us a little bit about the early days of Mr. Tony Coleman. How did you get in to music in this crazy business? Or I guess before we talk about the business, how did you get into playing music?
Well, born to Dr. Smack Button, I went, drum!
I love it.
That's all I ever wanted to do. As long as I remember being alive, I wanted to, you know, play drums.
Right. That's awesome, man. And what about, so your father had a pretty prominent music career as well, correct?
Yes, he did. He was instrumental in creating Aspartame Brown. He was an artist on his own. Also, the MC at the Pop Kick
Art Store. That's awesome, man. Yeah, your father had a pretty prominent music career, and I'm assuming that had a big impact on influencing you and people you were probably may or may not have been exposed to. Talk about that a little bit.
Absolutely not, because I didn't meet my father until I was 17.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, gotcha.
So it was just in the genes, I guess.
There you go. So, yeah, so, I mean, you pretty much had to figure out, you know, your own path and had to do your own thing from the very beginning then, right?
I did, and I always wanted to do, and I still, you know, feel excited anytime I'm playing drums. I still love it.
Awesome. So is that the only instrument you pretty much play, or and what you started out on was the drums, correct?
Well, isn't the drums the only instrument?
There you go. Good answer. I'm a quitter, man, I guess, or I don't know. I'm kind of like Jeff Beck. Some of us, we started out on drums and then like got corrupted by the guitar. My deal was like I started out playing drums in church, and I wanted to play all the time. It didn't matter if it was midnight or 5 a.m. in the morning. I was like, right, if I can at least learn a couple chords, I can, you know, chill in my bedroom, not bother anybody. And then I just went down that rabbit hole, and here I am now. But it worked out that way. I guess God had another plan for me.
the only way to learn how to play drums is play real drums and be loud. That's what you got.
There you go, man. There you go. So what was it like starting out? I'm assuming starting out for you, your music career in Florida, correct?
Yeah.
Awesome. So I guess you started out like, you know, everyone else. You get out in your area, you know, playing some clubs, local artists. What was those years like? Was there anybody else? I'm assuming maybe that was up and coming along with you. And now that we have now that's done, you know, great things, stuff like that. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, when I was growing up, there was this that played all the hits, soul, funk, you know, hits, R&B hits, real R&B.
Right.
He would give record hops, they call them record hops, you know, dances, and he'd play records, spin the records, and he had a drummer that played with the records.
Right.
And he would stop the records. James Brown had a song called Cold Sweat, mm-hmm. where he would say, "You want to get a drummer, son?" And then they'd stop, and the drummer would have to play the beat to make people dance.
There you go.
And then my friend told him, "Hey, our friend can play drums better than that guy."
Oh, wow.
And he said, "No, I don't think so." Then one day he came in my neighborhood and heard me practicing, and he was like, "You are good." And
that's awesome, man.
I was a young guy who wasn't drinking, smoking, and chasing girls.
Right.
I was just focused on the drums, and he liked it.
Right. How old was you around that time, if you don't mind me asking?
I was like 16, 17,
So was this your first like legit gig or first big gig or?
That was my first legit gig where I actually got paid to play drums and I was always following this local band. It was a major band called Bobby Williams and the Martins.
Yeah.
And they were like a James Brown cover band.
Wow.
And they had a 15 piece band with two drummers.
Wow.
And one of the drummers was messed up on alcohol and drugs, and they hired my young green self, and that was the first band played in.
Wow, that had to be awesome, man. I can imagine it had to be such a confidence boost and, you know, affirmation for you at a young age, like, hey, I can do this, you know, I'm hanging up here with these cats, you know. It had to be an incredible feeling.
It was, and these cats were all a bunch of alcoholics and smoke herb and do all kind of nonsense, but
yeah,
they would always get right up on my ass if they thought I was doing anything. They'd be, "If we ever see you doing this, we'll kill you, you understand? Don't do this."
So it was tough, needless to say. Like that wasn't no room for error or slack. Well, good deal. Did you go to college or anything like that when you got out of high school?
When I got out of high school, but Army, and it was the first time I ever been out of the state of Florida, and I ended up going to Army in December. In Florida, it was pretty warm for December during Christmas time.
Right.
But my first time out of the state, I went to do my basic training in Fort Knox, Kentucky.
Wow. Small world. I think that, was that where Jimi Hendrix also did some of his stuff at in the early days?
He went to Fort, the other, Campbell.
Fort Campbell. Okay. That's crazy. Well, thank you for your service, by the way. I didn't know that. I didn't know that you served in the military. That's awesome, man.
Thank you. Proud to do it.
Absolutely. So what happened when you got out of the service? Did you get right back to playing music or?
No, I went home. I was going to school to be a commercial artist.
Uh-huh.
And then I got a job at night. At day and going to school at night. And I got a job at Disney World wearing a bird suit.
There you go. Humble beginnings, right? I love it.
Then I got fired for trying to hit on some girls in a bird suit.
Did it work?
It's not.
Did you get any dates?
It's not a good way to meet girls in a bird suit.
I'll have to remember that. Ladies and gentlemen, that's one thing to remember.
Some friends, when we were in the Army together, we had a band.
Mm-hmm.
And we all moved to Chicago to start the band. So we were the original Blues Brothers. We went all with the Chicago to become the next Earth, Wind, and Fire is what we thought.
Oh, man, come on. That's what I'm talking about. I love it. I love all that stuff. Man, have you, I'm sure you have. I can imagine just the people you've had access to and friends with and played with over the years. But there's always one band, I think I've told Boone about this, I'd love to see him like either jam with or jam out some of the stuff as some Tower of Power.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you know, all those guys are my friends.
Dude.
Yeah, I grew up loving all these people and end up becoming their friends and associates. And I met everybody in every genre of music from Pavarotti to Metallica. You know?
That's amazing, man. It's what an incredible career that you've had so far, that you've been blessed with, the people that you've got to play with. And like, I love the Drumeo video that you done. I know we're skipping ahead a little bit, but, and first time I watched it, and, you know, it's just like, he's right. You know, Tony has played with all these people, you know, from B.B. King to Albert King and whatnot. And these are the innovators, the originators, the kings of the blues, if you will. And, you know, when you get to play with those people and have that kind of access, of course, they show you what they like, how they want it done. And, you know, the more people you play with, it just, of course, just sharpens your craft and your tools and all that good stuff. So, yeah, what an amazing career, man, that you've had. And a special shout out, by the way, before I don't want to forget this, to our mutual friend Conrad for hooking this up, by the way, introducing both of us so we can make this possible today. Yeah. Hope he's doing well.
Well, see, music is the common denominator around the world. I don't care what language you speak. I don't care where you're from. Music brings human beings, humanity together. It touches everybody. So
absolutely.
I take it serious that I'm in that position with to reach people through my music.
Yeah, it's amazing, man. There's a quote, I think I heard the late, great Duane Allman, or read a quote from him one time about how music is a universal language, you know, that we can all feel just exactly like you said, you know, across the world. And, you know, the way that you can hit on certain feelings and emotions. And, well, you know, a big thing that kind of changed my perspective on this, and I know you know this gentleman really well, Mr. Derek Trucks, I heard in an interview that he said one time about how, you know, if he's going to see a show, he doesn't necessarily want to go see someone just because they're good. You know, him personally, you know, it's about hitting on feelings and emotions and feeling moved and stuff like that. That's why I think all that stuff will be around, you know, all those greats that came before us, you know, whether it's Ray Charles or Al Green or B.B. King and all these greats, because it almost kind of felt like a church-like religious experience, you know, when you went to some of their shows, it's just the power of music. And, you know, what's that like for you to drive the train on some of these shows for some of these people? You know, I know it'd be an incredible feeling playing, you know, with B.B. King on stage for 30 years, like, you know, now that we all got a lot of time, obviously due to this pandemic, and I'm sure you can't help but sit around and, you know, think about that and cherish some of those memories. Yeah. What was that like, man? I'm sure you get asked that a lot.
Well, the first time I got with B.B. King, I didn't like it. I didn't like B.B. King.
Really?
Yeah, because blues music was for old people music, I thought. I wanted to be with the hip people, you know.
Gotcha.
I wanted to be with anything but old black blues. Because growing up black and the blues culture, to be able to represent a scared black person, afraid of white people, and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, man, I ain't going to. I hate that music.
Right.
And then B.B. taught me how to love it, though.
Oh, man.
And how to respect it and appreciate it.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you a story about it, if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, when I was with B.B., like I said, we'd be playing, and I Want to Be with Chaka Khan and Earth, Wind, and Fire. And,
oh, man, come on.
Funkadelic, you know, that kind of stuff. And I'm playing with B.B. King wearing suits. And, you know, I want to be cool, like eat.
Right.
You know, but B.B. would play every Zoom. B.B. would go to Mississippi and play free for the people that couldn't afford to see him, you know.
Wow.
That's out amazing. In the Delta,
mm-hmm.
And he'd have to play in these little barns and things that they would make turn into clubs, and it was really pretty out there, you know. I mean,
right.
Going through the stage, that sort of thing.
Right.
And I was making fun of the place and had the band laughing, and before we went on stage, B.B. pulled me over to the side and asked me, he said, "Son, you think this is funny? These people are funny, and you don't want to be here? Well, you know, this is where I grew up, and you're hurting my feelings because you're making fun of these people, and this is where I'm from, you know."
Oh, wow.
And the blues is black culture. It's our culture.
Right.
And you are black, aren't you? You do appreciate the culture, don't you?
Right.
And I thought about it, and I felt like a total a-hole, you know.
Yeah.
And then I realized, I should honor that, and I started taking it serious then, you know.
Right. That had to be interesting for him because, I mean, B.B. King being, you know, one of the people that invented this modern-day blues that we have. I call it modern days. If you go back to, well, you know, around when he started and things started to get electrified, and, you know, then we started having guys like Muddy Waters when he went electric, and then Elmore James and people like that, and B.B. went electric.
Yep.
And so if you start there and up to present day, I mean, he's seen all these people that came out after him that he's influenced. You know, it didn't matter if it was from these English rock bands to now these arena rock bands, when you get into people like Zeppelin and all that, and then you got people like Fabulous Thunderbirds and Stevie Ray Vaughan and then John Mayer, and then it just keeps going. And you know, I know that had to be special for him, you know, to see the impact that he's had. But yeah, I can see him also at the same time wanting to be protecting of that, because he kind of helped, you know, establish that. And yeah, it seems like playing with B.B. King was one of those gigs where you learn so much, not, you know, off the stage just as much as you probably learn on stage playing with him. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, his whole thing was he wanted to have dignity. He didn't want to be on stage. He said, when you're on stage with me, I want you to look like you're going to the bank to borrow money.
Yeah. I love it.
And he didn't care what you did on your own time, but when you're on tour with him, he was like, when you're at home or whatever on your time, you do whatever you want. I don't care, but I don't want you on stage drunk and high and you know.
Right. Absolutely. So when you got around, let's go back to around when you got to Chicago. You're out of the military now. You're in Chicago. Did you say that you moved to Chicago with a band that you were playing with at that time, correct?
Say again, I'm sorry.
So when you got out of the military and you migrated up to Chicago, did you say that you moved to Chicago with a band that you were currently playing with? Is that correct?
Yeah, some friends out of the military.
Gotcha. So what were you guys doing when you got to Chicago? Were y'all doing kind of more the, you know, the new wave stuff that was going on, you know, during the R&B circus
we were doing
during that time?
Yeah, stuff, you know, the Chaka Khan and all of that kind of stuff. Rufus the Chaka Khan, you know,
awesome.
All the commercial funky stuff.
Right on.
James Brown, Cool as the Gang. But we were also helped to rock. We played like Led Zeppelin and...
Wow.
White Trash, Allman Brothers. We mixed it up, you know.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And but then the band broke up because we weren't getting enough food to eat, and we weren't getting paid.
There never is enough food, is there, man? Oh man.
So we're starving to death, and other guys were like, "Man, I'm done with this. Forget about
right.
that," you know. But I was determined. I was not going to quit until I became successful.
That's awesome. So what did you do next then after that disbanded?
Well, there was a family that I was living with, the bass player's in-laws,
mm-hmm.
let us, me and the bass player, live in their basement. And they had seven daughters, and all of the daughters sang.
Wow.
And the dad made sure, my daughters, they're your sisters, remember that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, uh-huh. But one of the girls had a gig singing with Otis Clay, and we wanted to go to her rehearsal with him. And turned out Otis needed a drummer and a bass player, and that's how we got the gig.
Oh wow, that's awesome!
And then Otis was touring around the South, and we went to Japan and recorded a live album, my first live record. And when we came back, we were opening a Blues Fest with B.B. King, Bobby Bland, Albert King, Little Milton, Donnie Taylor, Tyrone Davis, Muddy Waters, all these different people. And at the end of the tour in Chicago, we had a jam session.
Yeah.
And the band that was at the club where we were going to have the jam session did not want to play unless they got paid. I knew the band and asked them if I could use their gear. And they said, yeah, man, you guys are always playing for free.
Oh, wow.
And we did the jam session, and B.B. offered us a job.
That's awesome. It's crazy how it happens. You know, it's now I always say that no two paths are the same. Any musician's, you know, or band's career path are the same, and it seems like so coincidental. You know, almost like it's just one of those things, being at the right place, the right time, all that stuff.
And we weren't concerned about getting paid. We just wanted to play. You know.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. That's so awesome how that worked out there. I was reading some more stuff here about that in your bio. This is after a jam session in Chicago club called the High, what's the name?
High Chaparral.
Chaparral, there you go. B.B. King jam with Otis Clay's rhythm section. And B.B. King liked the rhythm section so much that he asked them to join him as his touring band. And then you played for a little while, and then it said BB's ex-drummer returned. So then you lost the gig temporarily. Is that right?
Yeah.
So what happened during that period? I guess was playing with some other people, or did you go back playing with Otis Clay during that time? Or
I went back with Otis Clay, did another tour in Japan,
mm-hmm.
and then I came back from that tour in Japan, and I decided I was going to quit music for good. I didn't want anything to do with it. That's what I said. And
right.
Then I moved to Dallas, Texas, and my wife at the time was a flight attendant for Brandiv Airlines, and I was going back to school to be a commercial artist. And one day I was downtown Dallas and saw a drum shop and pulled over, and I wanted to go inside the drum shop to see if the Pearl Drum Magazine,
Oh, wow.
The new catalog, because I was supposed to be in it.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
And when I walked in the drum shop, the drum department guy was looking at the Pearl Drum Magazine. He said, "Man, I got your picture right here. That's your Tony Coleman. This is your picture."
That's amazing.
I was like, wow.
It's one of those affirmation moments, right?
And he said, "Are you here to play with Johnny Taylor? I know he's looking for a drummer, and he auditioned me, but they're going on tour, and they need a drummer. Are you here to play with them?" I said, "No." He said, "Well, you should let me call the manager and tell him you're here." And I went over there, and I ended up getting the gig with Johnny Taylor, and I was back in the saddle again. So
that's awesome. That's incredible. So, Brother Boone, is your mic working over there?
Yeah.
There we go. Can you hear Brother Boone, Tony?
Yes, I can.
Awesome. What you got for my man? We love blues and all this stuff so much, and his knowledge of all this. What do you got, man? Hit him with something.
Man, you've accomplished so much in your career. Is there anything that can prepare you for playing with a legacy artist like that? What is that like to step into that world?
It's amazing, because for me, everybody was I was a fan,
Right.
And to be working with these people and getting to know them, and you find out, wow, well, they could be knuckleheads just like me. But it's a feeling of it's pretty euphoric,
right?
And it's just like a dream come true, something I always wanted to do.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I mean, and even you're kind of obviously in that same league now, and that same realm too. It's like, if you told Boone and I about 10 years ago, as we're listening to Cook County Jail, or, live at the Regal, or Albert Collins and all this stuff, that we get to hang out and talk to one of our favorite drummers, Tony T.C. Coleman, we'd be like, yeah, right, man. What universe you living in? But that's got to be awesome. Like I said, for you, everyone that you get to impact and meet and all that good stuff. So speaking of, I know you're interested in other aspects of the music industry than just touring and live performing. Talk about some of the producing stuff and studio stuff that you enjoy doing and like to do, and any projects and stuff like that.
Well, I've produced several artists, and the artists are pretty good artists, and I think the music was good. It was received well, but once again, sometimes when you meet people, you find out that you don't agree with certain aspects of their personalities, and I'm sure they feel the same way about me. So a lot of,
right.
I'm at a
different
place in my life where I don't have an ego. I really don't have an ego about, hey, I'm right. Tony Coleman, hey. But
right. I mean, that's got to be a different, obviously, hat to kind of wear and step into, going from, being a performing artist and now stepping into a different role, like a producer or engineer, or maybe into the business, booking and management or whatever. But yeah, I'm assuming, at the same time, it had to be fun, and I'm sure it can be challenging at times too, because you're still being creative.
Oh, yeah, it's not all fun now.
Yeah. It's just you're getting to be creative differently. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I consider myself a professional, and
absolutely.
I would consider myself an expert in drumming, soul, blues. I play with some of the best artists ever. And,
absolutely.
I think I know what I'm talking about when I say this is how you can play that music the right way. You know what I
right.
mean? And a lot of people just have a problem being told how to do things properly without taking it personal, you know.
Right. Yep, there's always that friction line, right? Figuring out where the friction line is. And then I get it because, the producers.
Yeah, everybody's got a ego against who they are. But
right.
When that happens for me in business, I don't. That's the part of the business I'm going to deal with.
Right. And, that's the thing. Of course, obviously, both of us understand it and get it from the artist's perspective. You know, it's your music. I've put my blood, sweat, and tears in it. You know, I love it. It's my baby, all that good stuff. But, it is great at the same time working with, the right producer and good people in that row who's not maybe as emotionally as invested as you are. And sometimes it can be good when you've got that third party source to kind of help mitigate certain things, maybe certain things that, that you may not have thought of or different things like that, especially someone like you, that's had such exposure and have learned and got to grow and create with some of the best, from B.B. King and everyone else you mentioned.
Very, very fortunate.
Yeah. What's your favorite type of projects to work with when it comes to in the studio, whether it's playing or producing?
I like playing natural. I don't like over rehearsing. I play with feeling, and I don't play with technical. I don't like technical aspects of playing music.
Right.
And I don't like click track. I'm the click track.
There you go. Say it again, baby. TC the click track.
And love I it. Think when people play 20 solos and comp solos and things, that's just overkill. I like just go in the studio and play.
Exactly.
And if it speeds up a little bit or slows down a little bit, if it's got as long as it's got consistent natural time and natural feeling, that's all I care about. So I'm kind of like old school, I guess.
Absolutely.
I'm not trying to perfect something because if you try to do that, you'll be in the studio all year.
Right. That's it, man.
And you always want to do it better. I don't know anyone that ever felt like that was it. You always feel like, I can do it better. Well, if you can do it better, you should have done it better before you did.
Right. That's it, man. I'm going to do this to you, brother, and I know it's hard, and I know it may change from one day to the next. But if you had to pick, let's say, five projects, albums, whatever, singles that you've got to play on, produce, be a part of, whether it's your stuff or legacy artist or any other artist, what's some of the five studio projects that you've got to do, whether it's projects, records, albums, singles, etc., and why?
Well,
why are
the
they
first
important
one,
to you?
That's an easy question. When BB did what he called the Blues Summit.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And he had every major blues artist that you could imagine. And that session, man, that was heaven.
Oh, wow.
And to be a part of that, I get goosebumps thinking about those.
That's awesome.
And everybody that came in there was nervous, except Etta James and Boots Brown.
Wow.
And Alan Collins. They were those three people were not nervous at all.
Yeah.
But everybody else was nervous. Oh my God, we're playing with people, y'all, man.
That had to be amazing. I mean, playing for B.B. King, with B.B. King for 30 years, I'm sure you have seen so many people from all different walks of life that play all kinds of different instruments and different genres of music, from John Mayer to Slash to Derek Trucks and everyone else in between. And I can only imagine, like, it doesn't matter who you are, what instrument you play, what genre of music, if you meet B.B. King, it just... That name just kind of humbles you automatically. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he fired me 5 times.
No way. But he kept hiring you back, though.
He hired me 6.
I love it. 6 times a charm, right?
No, he didn't fire me because I was drunk or not doing the gig, because I used to argue with him all the time. And then he pulled a big... The big move and say, well, you got a choice. You can listen to me or go home. Which one you want to do? All right, I'll go home. All right, bye. Bye.
Man, I love your and BB's just interplay with each other on stage. I can't remember what show it was. Was it maybe the live at the Albert Hall show? You guys were feeling it, obviously, and it kind of was kind of speeding up a little bit, more energy was getting into it. And I think B.B. King looked back to at you guys or something. He's like, watch it back there. I hate to have to cut somebody.
Oh, he always did.
Hilarious, man. I love it. But, yeah, it was awesome seeing you guys, you know, interplay with each other like that on stage. It was amazing.
Well, when you tour together like that, B.B.'s attitude was, you only way you get out of this band is you fire yourself or you die.
Yeah, that's it.
Sounds familiar.
There you go. Boone, what else you got, man? I know you got some good stuff.
Man, you've played with the cream of the crop, most influential people. I mean, just all my favorite influences. Mm-hmm. Is it hard to move on from that caliber of musician? I know you always want to hear those people and other players. Has that been a struggle in your career?
The only time I've had difficulties and the only time I was nervous was with Jamie Johnson.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah.
And why was that, you say?
Just... Well, I'll tell you why. And I hear an echo in my voice. Are you guys hearing me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Are you still on speakerphone or Bluetooth or anything by any chance?
Yeah, I'm on a speakerphone.
Okay, that could be why.
Okay, well, as long as you can hear me.
Yeah, go ahead, man.
So, I was visiting Willie Nelson on his bus. He was recording Vince Gill and the Time Jumpers, a record for a country singer. Gosh, I forget the gentleman's name. Anyway, they were doing a record.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry?
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, anyway, and Jamie Johnson came on the bus, and I left the bus. I wanted to give Willie some space with his friend. I didn't know the guy.
Right.
Then later on, he came back to Nashville, and I had the same situation. And this time, Willie said, hey, Tony, you know Jamie? Jamie, you know Tony? And Jamie said, oh, I saw him on the bus, but I don't know if he was your new bodyguard or something. He said, no, he ain't my bodyguard. That's B.B. King's drummer. He said, oh, how you doing, Mr. Coleman? So anyway, we met. And when I left the bus, I said to Jamie, hey, Jamie, if you ever need a drummer, give me a call. You know, I was just kind of goofing around.
Right.
And he said, well, give me your number.
That's awesome.
And I gave him my number, and I left. And about 4 days later, I get a call from Jamie. Hey, Mr. Coleman, it's James Johnson. I met you with Willie, and you said if I ever need a drummer, give me a call. Well, I'm in need of one. Would you be interested in doing some gigs with me? I said, sure, man, but then I have to be honest. I don't know you. I don't know your music. He said, well, you play with B.B. King, and you know Willie Nelson. I think you'll be fine.
There you go, buddy.
And then I said, okay, so when are rehearsing? He said, well, we got to leave tomorrow night going to Baton Rouge. I'm like, wow. No rehearsal?
Well, there you go.
So he said, you'll do fine. You're in the bass player. I'll give you his number. He's the band leader. And then when I got on the bus, we were driving from Nashville to Baton Rouge. He said, well, man, here's his songs. Now, I don't know if he's going to do them. We do two songs, you know. I said, yeah, that's like B.B. And after that, you just got to strap up, saddle in.
There
man.
You go. It's
And yeah. I did the gig, and I was screwing up big time. And then I told Jamie, the audience wasn't really noticing it, but I knew.
Right.
And then I told Jamie, I said, hey, man, I really was screwing up. He said, what do you mean? Did you listen to my music? I said, yeah. He said, well, don't listen no more. Just play.
I love it. That's awesome, man.
So then, after I learned Jamie's tune, his main tune, we were going to go on tour with Willie Nelson to fill in for Mr. Merle Haggard. He was sick.
Mm, wow.
And we were going to do like 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So the first day of the tour, Mr. Haggard passed.
Oh, wow.
And then when Jamie showed up his sound check, he said, no, no, Merle, I ain't doing nothing but Merle Haggard songs.
Uh-oh.
And I was like, God dang, I only know about 4 Merle Haggard songs.
Not after that show.
And Skokie and stuff like that. You know?
Yeah.
And Jamie calling out all these old classic Merle Haggard, Kern River and all these waltz and stuff. And I was up there screwing up. And a couple of times Jamie would turn around and say, Tony Coleman, just sit this one out.
Oh,
and I felt
man.
Real bad. So I say to Jamie, hey, Jamie, I love you. You're my brother from another mother forever, man. I love you. I really did playing with you, but I don't think it's fair to you when you want to do those classic country songs, and I don't know them, and it's not fair to you, the audience, or me. So we right. need to get a country drummer that can play country.
Yeah.
And Jamie said, well, I guess you're right. You do look like you were trying to solve a math project.
Oh, wow.
But so then he told me, he said, hey, I see a video of you playing percussion with BB. I like percussion, and I use a drummer and a percussionist sometimes, and would you like to play percussion? I'd love to keep you in the band, man. You're a treat to have in the band. And I was thinking, percussion in a country band? What am I going to be, Country Santana now?
That is different.
And I did it, and it worked. I did it my own way, and we had a great time for 2.5 years.
Awesome. So are you still doing that gig, or are you done with that now?
No, I'm done with Jamie. Just use one drummer again.
Gotcha. Well, kudos to nobody. You, man.
Doing anything now.
Yeah, it's true. No, I was just saying props to you, man. That's very admirable of you, I think. You know, I always admire that when I see someone stepping out of their element like that, you know, and cause, you know, you learn that way, or you can learn that way and garner new things and nurture different things, your craft. And, you know, I've been on a weird kick this whole pandemic, just all over the place, diving into different genres and different things, just because I want to, you know, learn and expand my knowledge and my skills and all that. So I think that's really cool that you've done that.
Well, my attitude, it's like blues. A lot of times we get into the racial elements of music.
Right.
Like that's black music, that's white music, that's this music, that's right. that music. Well, it does play a part, the racial aspect of your culture.
Right.
And in order for you to play the music properly, you need to embrace the culture of where the music comes from so you can understand it.
Absolutely.
So for me personally, I went all around Nashville, up and down Broadway, sitting there with country bands and watching mm-hmm. and asking questions. And I go to some country bars and couple of times people would be looking at me like, that guy really in here? I'd be like, yeah, I'm in the band out. I'm embracing music. I'm embracing the culture, the lifestyle. I'm trying to learn. Right. And that's how you become better, by embracing Absolutely. Other cultures and other types of people, man. That's beautiful.
Absolutely, man. 100%.
In my opinion, you know.
Yeah, I totally agree with that 100%. Our first record that we ever put out was not even our own stuff. It was a tribute record to a black Kentucky bluesman from the Hopkinsville area. His name was John Brim, and he later migrated up to the Chicago area when you had all the great 50s stuff going on. And John Brim recorded and did some stuff with Little Walter and Elmore James, did a record with Elmore James and different stuff like that. And see, Kentucky, when a lot of people think of Kentucky, and this was kind of our whole thesis and mission of it, if you will, people always think of country music and bluegrass and stuff like that, but we have a very rich blues heritage here as well. People don't know that the first gentleman to ever record acoustic slide guitar was Sylvester Weaver from Louisville, Kentucky. He did it before Robert Johnson. And this guy named John Brim from Hopkinsville, Kentucky, was the guy who wrote the song Ice Cream Man that Van Halen cut on their first record. And what's really cool about that is right before Van Halen cut that song, John Brim was pretty much retired. I believe he owned a laundromat. And
Is that right? In a record store,
and was just doing that. And then when Van Halen put that first record out, it was monumental, and they covered his song Ice Cream Man, and it helped him get out of retirement, especially financially, to where he could, you know, tour to the end of his days and play and be happy. And so our first record, under the guidance of our good friend and mentor Greg Martin from the Kentucky Headhunters, told us about John Brim and taught us about him. And we did the same thing. Boone and I remember we read Robert Palmer, the writer, a book he's got called Deep Blues. And I learned so much, you know, from about Robert Nighthawk to Charlie Patton to Sunhouse. And, you know, I learned through my own research that Elmore James worked in like a small repair shop working on radios and stuff like that. So he understood how to work on circuitry. And the reason why his amp sound was just so nasty and raw and dirty, bluesy, and gritty like we love it. One, because of him and his playing and his style, but he's also a wizard, too. He knew how to work on a lot of that stuff. And Boone's always had a great perspective. When we took that project on, we wanted to approach it as, you know, what'd you say, a rock band stepping into Chess Records during the 50s era, kind of that time, kind of doing our own thing, but also we wanted to pay respects and showcase who this guy was and show that Kentucky is also known for other, you know, forms of music than just that. So when you talk about, you know, the point is, when you talk about saying, you know, really diving into the culture and doing your homework, there's a lot of truth to that. You know, that helped us change our whole perspective. And most importantly, that really changed and helped us evolve our songwriting from that day on forward. And
hell yeah.
Yeah, it's gave us such a unique perspective and love and preservation for all this stuff, you know, that we stem from and we love doing. And it's funny, talking about the Jamie Johnson subject and the culture and different forms of music, it's a great point. It's always been so interesting to me, you know, the acceptance and how that all that kind of integrates. You can go back and pinpoint Willie Nelson doing Seven Spanish Angels with Ray Charles. And our good friends, the Kentucky Headhunters, that's from our area, they won a Grammy.
Yeah, I like them.
They're just dudes straight off the farm. They talk with the countryest accent. They're some of the best sweetheart guys. I think it was Chris Robertson from the Black Crowes said they look like they fell off a cabbage truck leaving town or something. Got long hair and long, you know, and Marshalls and guitars. And then they did a record.
The drummer.
Oh, there you go.
Fred. I met the drummer at ZZ Top concert.
That's amazing. That's awesome. I'd love to see you guys jam. I'm going to put that right there. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to call it. I'd love to see Fred Young and T.C. Coleman go after it, have a big drum duo. That'd be amazing. But, yeah, they're
man, we'd have fun, man. We'd have a good time, man.
We got to get you to Kentucky, man. We got to get you down here. We got to figure out something.
Get them
down
here and hang out.
That would be such
a fun
time.
Just answer the question. You don't have to incriminate yourself. You know anybody got some Kentucky good drinking whiskey?
Say it again.
You know anybody that's got some good Kentucky natural drinking whiskey?
Natural drinking whiskey. Oh yeah, there's some people around. Oh yeah, it's still around.
All right, that's all I care about. Look me up.
There you go, man. But, yeah, after they won a Grammy, I remember Greg Martin was telling me about, because I've had him on the show and the podcast and everything. They were at some big award show. Maybe it was a Grammy award show. And he said all these musicians was back there. Some of the Allman Brothers was back there and all these people. And they saw Johnny Johnson sitting at a table by himself. And they went over and just hung out with him the whole entire time. And then they later did a record with Johnny Johnson. And it's amazing. So there's always been such a kinship, and it just always works somehow in the country space, blues space. When you take it all the way back, you know, Willie Nelson, Ray Charles, Kentucky Headhunters, and Johnny Johnson. And so when you know, saying you played with Jamie Johnson, I was like, that's awesome. Maybe I get too far into it, but
I listen and learn and study all music from heavy metal to hillbilly. You know, like I like just to be on my low. You know,
absolutely, man. It's Boone. You said it one time. You was like, I think I heard you say in an interview, like, if you don't think there wasn't any soul in Bill Monroe's voice, then
there's not a lot of difference between Bill Monroe's voice and Robert Johnson's. It's just nuances.
Yeah, just different. Yeah. That's very true. What else you got for me?
Different
approaches, yeah. That's it. What else you got, my man? Hit him with another good one.
You're obviously very generous with your time. You do a lot of instructional videos, a lot of interviews. Do you feel a responsibility to pass on your knowledge and your experience to the future generation?
Like us knuckleheads?
I do.
That's great, man. That's really important. And in our career, we've been very blessed to run into people like you, like Billy Gibbons, who's willing to pass along what they know. And that means the world to us. That's the most important thing that we've encountered. Really makes us a better band, because you could easily, you know, sit on your accomplishments and sit on your knowledge and not pass it on. But you do good things with what you've done. And I think that speaks a lot about you personally.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks, man. I really think enjoying doing that because that's what the older guys did for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
DB and everybody, they passed it on down. So I got to pass it on so you younger cats can keep it going.
100%, man, and that really means the world to a lot of people. It means the world to me, to Boone, to a lot of us, because I mean, you know, our band, you know, we're just white young dudes from Kentucky, you know, off the farm playing, you know, rock and roll, and we love blues and all this stuff. And then, like you said, the people that we've got to meet and be exposed to, how, you know, they never judged us or discriminated against us for any of those things, and was just so open. One guy in particular, shout out to, what's our brother's name, T.D. Young in Lexington.
Yeah.
I think he's opened for B.B. King a couple of times and done a lot in the blues circuit, and he's got a small blues club out in Lexington, and when we were starting out, he would book us, and we couldn't even draw flies, man, but he would still book us because we would love, you know, we'd love to get him up and play with him. And he had so many amazing stories about, you know, opening up for B.B. King and meeting all these people. And he just saw that we were just so hungry for it and wanted to learn and were eager. And he purposely made time to, you know, teach us and tell us everything he could and give us guidance and advice. And sometimes he'd overpay us when we definitely, you know, didn't sell enough tickets or bring enough people in. You know, he's like, you guys go get you something to eat, man. Y'all put this in your gas tank. And that means a lot.
Here's what I want y'all to do. Can I ask you to stop?
Yes, sir.
First and foremost, don't ever change who you are from being Kentucky, hillbillies, or accents, or whatever. Be yourself. Always be yourself.
Absolutely.
But always add something into your arsenal, musical arsenal.
Yes.
And but never stop being who you are and share who you are with others so we can bridge gaps about humanity based through our music. So
100%.
And all these racial problems, you know?
Preach, man, yeah. There's healing powers in this stuff, man.
Hmm?
There's healing powers in music. I believe it. There's healing powers in it.
Well, in my opinion, music, we get it. But
yeah.
A lot of people don't understand the art. How important it is to the country being together, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. 100%.
I mean, that's the way I think about it.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, I just love it and so appreciative, you know, again, people like you that's been around and done so much and so open book and willing to talk to anybody of any race, creed, any part of the world, you know, that really means a lot to some of us in the younger generation. And especially, you know, a lot of us that love it and want to preserve all this stuff that we love so much. And definitely preserving a big part of that's healing and love and all that good stuff for everybody.
Yeah, that's not just corny stuff, man.
No, man, it's real
the world
stuff.
A beautiful place.
Absolutely. It's, well, I mean, you know better than us, man, you know, playing across the world, so many different forms of music. You know, it doesn't matter if you're playing blues in Tokyo with Otis Clay or Australia, which I got to ask you about because I saw you put something on Facebook.
Hey,
don't let me forget this. With B.B. King.
I've met so many great, great musicians and people in different genres, like the guys in Judas Priest. And,
yeah.
B.B. once got mad because I didn't take him to go see Judas Priest. They invited us to go, and I went. B.B. said, "Why didn't you call me, son?" I said, "Man,
wow,
you didn't want to hear that." He said, "How you know?"
I love that. I love that, man. That's amazing.
And I remember going on stage. Those guys were so loud.
I love it.
They had a microphone on the doggone Holly, man.
I love it. I love it. Well, man, speak on this because obviously I can tell, you know, your heart's there and we both be vibing on this, man. We agree on it. What's it like playing the music that you played for so many different races, colors, and creeds, different parts of the world, and seeing how it still brings people together? It doesn't matter if you're playing Thrill Is Gone in Texas, Australia, Japan, or Germany. I mean, what's that like, seeing how it still heals and brings people together for you all these years?
It's a beautiful thing, and I've got to spend time in backyards with people, eating food and drinking, and fellowshipping all kinds of people from all over the world, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the best things I've ever heard is one could argue, you know, we may or may not be obviously solving certain problems with music, but the important thing is we're solving existential problems. You know what I mean? When we have existential resolutions, you know, especially through song and melody and music, when it hits just right and you got that truthful groove laying down from the Tony Coleman, baby.
That's right.
You hear that groove and it's truthful and it's right, you know it's Tony. You know it's TC. Right? You heard it right here on Rock Revival Podcast, baby.
That's what I was hitting. It's like my man said, that's what I do.
That truth groove, baby. If it's right, you know it's TC. You know it's Tony. That's it. But, I've seen it. You've seen it. We've been a part of it. We've helped create it in certain aspects on different scales. It's just music has a way of bringing people together, and I can't help but feel better when I listen to Live at the Regal or Blues is King, you know, or if I listen to an Al Green song or whatever it is. I can't help but be born productive. I can't help but want to love other people and let that shine out through. You know what I mean?
Well, like they say on the keyboard, they got black keys and white keys.
Yeah. That's it, baby. You got to play them
all. We all got something to say.
And there you go. That's it, man. Let me ask you this. I'm really interested in this, and we'll start wrapping things up. Again, Tony, thank you so much, brother, for your time. I can't appreciate you enough for that.
Oh, you're welcome, my brother.
What about some new cats on the scene, man? I'd love to pick your brain on some new cats. What's some new artists, new musicians, new drummers? Who you been into, and who you watching at? Who do we need to know about? Who's on TC's radar?
Anybody that plays, man. I'm not into the media saying, you know, this and that. I watch everybody. It doesn't matter to me, man. If you play, I look at everybody, you know, like we're in the same club, you know, exactly.
However, sometimes there's cats that you just cannot not know about it, especially if they're kind of maybe in some of the similar world. So what I'm getting around, let me ask you about this guy, because he's one of my all-time favorite drummers out today, next to you, of course, respectfully. Tell me about brother Nate Smith. Are you a Nate Smith fan who's played some with the Wolfpack guys and Fearless Flyers, and now he's playing for Brittany Howard, solo career, who was in the Alabama Shakes. Are you familiar with Nate Smith?
I've seen him, yeah.
Dude, he's one of those. And what's so impressive about him is he's one of those, I can hear him and within like the first 3 or 4 seconds, I know it's him. You know what
I
mean?
That's good. I like that.
You can hear that with guitar players. Yeah.
Here's something. One of the worst drummers, technically, who's probably the most boring drummer in the world, and is he can't play straight quarter notes on the hat like when he hits the snare, the downbeat stops on the hat.
Oh man!
Right?
Yeah.
that's Charlie Watts.
That's very true. I didn't notice that until you just pointed that out.
I know a lot of people get all excited when they see drummers who go, you know, all of that.
That's true. It's very
but
true.
But here's the deal. Charlie Watts, that it's like this. Cheek, cheek, pop, $1,000,
$2,000,
$1 million,
$2 million,
$3 million.
That's it, man. He don't care.
So that's all
cares.
That matters. Just do you.
That's it. Man,
I don't worry about what nobody else do. I do me.
There you go, baby.
Words to live by.
Right, I try to be the best me I can be. You get it?
That's it. That's all you got. I ain't in competition with nobody but me, myself, and I.
There you go.
No, we've got to figure out how to get him and Fred to jam together. That would be insane, because Fred is one of those, man. He's like that too. He's got a unique style, and his approach has kind of changed over the years a little bit, you know, with wear and tear on your body and stuff like that. It catches up with you. And so he's got a different, he kind of does a lot of cool feels and ghost notes with his left hand, but he'll come down and double down on the power with his right hand. It's a little bit unconventional, but it's so unique, and it's his thing. And one of the best pictures I've ever saw, and I wish there was video footage out there somewhere, was Fred Young, what's his name from the band?
Levon
Helm and Buddy Miles doing a big three-way.
I love those guys.
That would be insane. Did you
Levon
ever get
Helm, Buddy Miles, you just called two of my heroes, man.
Dude, I'm glad I just said that. Tell me about Buddy Miles. I'm sure you got to cross paths with him and maybe jam and stuff like that, right?
I hope I don't talk too much, but I can tell you a good story.
Oh, please. I'd love it.
Okay, so my favorite drummers are singing drummers.
Yeah.
Karen Carpenter, Buddy Miles, Levon Helm.
Wow.
The drummer from Rare Earth.
Yeah.
All of those folks. So Buddy Miles was my main guy. I just love because he was so powerful and funky and soulful, and he could play blues, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So I went to see Buddy Miles' concert. It was Buddy Miles and Ginger Baker concert.
Wow.
Wow, that's insane.
And they had this African group called Fela Kuti.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And I waited. Buddy Miles, I was right up front. And they pushed Buddy Miles' kit right in front of me.
Wow.
So I was flipping. I mean, I'm a fanatic fan, right?
Yeah.
So as soon as Buddy came out to perform, from the moment he started playing, I was yelling, Buddy! Buddy! Buddy!
That's awesome.
Give me a stick, Buddy!
Let me have a stick, man.
So finally, Buddy got tired of me, and he said on the microphone, get the F up, loud as hell.
Oh,
so
man.
So I shut up, and I was like, wow, I'm his favorite fan. He told me to shut up.
I love
so,
it.
So now I'm a successful drummer playing with BB King and Carlos Santana and Buddy Miles. And right?
Oh, wow.
And Buddy Miles was in the audience, and the bass player, you know, look, there's Carlos and Buddy. So I'm looking at Buddy the whole time, and he never looked at me once.
Wow.
He never looked at the drummer. You know, I was like, so after the show, I saw Carlos. I said, hey, man, how you doing? He said, good. I said, where's Buddy? He said, he had to leave. He couldn't stay.
So oh, man.
I was like, dang, I missed seeing him, right?
Dang, that stinks.
So then a couple of years later, I saw him. He was in Chicago at the Blues Club. I was hanging there.
Yeah.
And I went and set out, and I told him the story about me arrested on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you said, shut the hell up. And he said, oh, really, man? I did that? Well, I want to apologize. Oh, man, that was 20 years ago, dude. He said, did you ever get the stick? No. So then he gave it to Trump.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
And we became friends after that all the way.
That's amazing, man. That's so cool. It's cool when you get to, you know what it's like, man, getting to meet some of your heroes. But if you're ever fortunate enough to get to establish relationships and friendships with some of them, that's almost indescribable, you know?
Yeah, man. I've amazing life, man.
Yeah. And I got one more question for you before I ask, or before we wrap up. I saw, and I got to know about this. I wish this would have happened. And tell me if I get this wrong. I think I saw a couple of days ago on your Facebook page, you were talking about one time when you guys were playing in Australia, and I think Rick James was staying at the same hotel. Is that right?
Probably Funkadelic, George Clinton.
Yeah, and they were going to, some of them went and watched you guys, and then y'all talked about, like, he was potentially going to produce a BB King record.
No, we were off, and they were playing that night, and they invited us to their show.
Yeah, that's awesome. But did you say something at the end of that post, like he was maybe interested, teasing the idea of producing BB on an album?
Yeah, I said to him, I said, George, you should produce BB. He said, man, I'd love to, man.
That'd have been amazing.
And he said, this is what he said that I found interesting. He said, I would love to put my P in BB's B.
Wow.
You know, talking about Parliament, you know.
Yeah.
But the way he said it, I thought was pretty artistic.
I love that.
He said, yeah, man, I would love to put my P in BB's B.
Did any of that ever get to happen, or did we lose BB before that could happen?
It never happened because, unfortunately, some of these managers and things,
yeah,
they only see what they see, and they don't see the bigger, broader picture of mixing different things with other things, you know.
Collaborating, yeah. I get that.
And that's why it's up to us artists to mix our styles up and
that's play
some good music.
That's right, man. Absolutely. Absolutely. Tony, brother, thank you again so much, man, for your time. Before we wrap up real quick here, let the peoples know, man, what do we need to know? What's going on in your world? Anything you want to plug? Anything you want to tell us about? Any, where can people check you out? All that good stuff. And keep up with
it. Well, we're getting ready to do a BB King movie.
That's right.
Play myself in.
That's awesome.
And I'm producing some new music, and I'm trying to come up with a concept album, different artists doing what we're talking about,
right?
And reaching out to different types of people, especially America, to get on the one and stop all the nonsense, all the political
stuff.
So I want to be like John and Bob Marley and Mark.
Yeah, man, Bob, that's beautiful.
You know, I want to write music who try and realize that we're all the same. Got to work together and live together. We really got to do it. You know,
that's awesome.
And we got to respect each other, whether we're different or not, man. It doesn't matter. We're all here, man.
110%, man.
Maybe I'm a dreamer. I'll just keep dreaming. So.
There you go, baby. I believe in the law of attraction. If you can believe it and you work towards it, you'll attract it. 100%.
Yep, I agree. That's I'm a product of that, man.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. And yeah, just again, man, thank you so much. Because speaking on
that, y'all get me in Kentucky so we can jam now.
Yeah, man, we're gonna do it. We got to figure it out, and we'll make it happen, man. We'll get past all this stuff, and we'll get back to doing what the world needs us to doing. You know what I'm saying? Making music, creating that existential value for people, and bridging that gap, spreading some peace and love. That's
there
what
you
we
go.
About.
There you go.
Tony, thank you again so much, man. By the way, do you got any kind of site, social media, all that stuff people can follow you at, fan pages or anything? Or
well, you can just find me on Facebook. That's pretty much all I do. I'm getting ready to back off that a little bit.
Gotcha. I hear that. I understand that. Well, stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. TC ain't done yet, baby. He's got some more stuff he's working on with producing, studio stuff, his own projects, and may not ever know where you may see Tony. It may see him down here around the Edmonton, Kentucky area, jamming with some hillbillies,
right.
and then we're having a good time doing our thing. You can come join us, or just go on down the road. We're gonna do our thing and be
yeah,
us.
So. I got some hillbilly in me.
There you go, man. Come down here and share some with us.
All right.
Good deal. God bless you, my man.
God bless y'all, too.
Thank you again, brother.
All
Tony
right, bro.
Coleman, TC. Tony Coleman on the Rock Revival Podcast.
TC.
There you go. The Truth Groove. If you hear it done right, you know it was Tony Coleman. I said that. There you go. Thank you, brother. Y'all be good and be blessed. Hey, everybody. Steve Jewell here, and thank you for listening to the Rock Revival Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and share with your friends, and catch Rock Revival every Wednesday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time on 99.1 FM The Hoss, or on the TuneIn app by searching WHSX, and keep up with all things Otis at theotisband.com.